Hey, Yoan here with you with another We Talk Fantasy Football. We are on show 3 for 2016. Of course, we've been talking about how it takes about the first 4 weeks of the season to get enough data together to be able to really make the decisions on who's the best play, who's the best streamer, what defenses are weak where, and usage, and all this type of stuff. And we talked a little bit about that in the first 2 weeks, but because of that, we will hit a little bit on that, I'm sure. But because there's a couple lessons, especially from this last week, that I think we learned. But largely this week, we'll be talking about the Fantasy 15 leaders, which is 15 players that we are taking a special look at to see if we're correct in predicting how they do for the season. This is based on what we thought preseason, not what we think after week three. Anything you want to add to that, Brad, or is that pretty much sum it up there?
Well, that's it. Again, we've done it similar to...
Oh, by the way, that's Brad, I'm Mo.
Yeah, that's right. The usual. We've done it similarly to how we did it last year, where we picked players from the first 10 rounds that interested us, and then we went with the last 5 players just being kind of random players. In this case, we did a pairing because we chose to do Thomas Rawls. I believe he was in the second round.
Third,
perhaps. Yeah. And at any rate, we chose... Fourth round.
There you go.
So we chose Thomas Rawls, but we're pairing him with Christian Michael because Rawls is going to be injured for the next while, so we want to be sure that we kind of get that position a little bit more so than the actual player.
Yeah. So speaking of that, this last week I just want to say, when we talk about the lessons, to me probably the biggest lesson learned was to... Don't play for the floor. You look at some players and you think to yourself, well, they're guaranteed to get me this amount of points, so I'm going to play them. And it can be really, really easy to go, okay, well, I'm that's a safe play, and to sit somebody else who has higher potential. And in general, really, running backs have a floor. Like, you know, they're probably going to get 8 points, but they don't have the potential to go off for 25, 30 points in the current kind of NFL, the same way a wide receiver does in a passing league. You know, I mean, it might happen occasionally, but it's more likely to happen with the wide receivers. And I think a couple times, and I know against you head-to-head, I played a player who had, because I thought his floor was safer, rather than the player with the higher upside, and that cost me the game. So I think that's an important lesson. Don't play for the floor. Play for the potential.
Well, and another thing, too, was that with that player, you made a decision to play a player that didn't have any... We hadn't seen his usage yet.
We're talking about McCluster.
Yeah.
Dexter McCluster.
And you couldn't... We just hadn't seen what he was going to be like in that offense. And asking a guy who'd signed earlier that week to be even an 8-point floor on an offense is being... You know, almost unreasonable. I mean, they just need time to acclimate to the offense, even if he understands the plays.
Yeah. So that said, that's I think a very important lesson. Don't go with running backs over wide receivers, if there's any question mark at all.
The wide receivers almost for sure will outscore in like this league.
And certainly because their ceiling is much, much higher. And it's kind of easy to get into that trap of just feeling like you're playing for the floor. Oh, I know what this guy's going to do. So this guy's going to, you know. Like, even if he had caught the touchdown pass that he just missed, he still would have only ended up with 10 points or something like that, right? Which is, I sat him for Evans because I felt Evans had potential to go for 5 points or to go to 30, and I didn't know what I was going to get. And he ended up going for 29. It's a lesson. Sometimes you just need, even though you know these things and you play for a while, sometimes you just fall into the traps, and it's easy to get yourself caught in that. So you just, it's a lesson, and you know, move forward from that.
Yeah, you were just trying to whip out the big balls and prove that you were a man for playing Dexter McCluster. But we did it together too, in fairness. So
yeah, exactly. And you know, going forward, do I think he could have good use? Yeah, but not right now, or not in that situation where, again, it's if you are. And in a lot of cases, we are looking at streaming running backs, and we've found again though streaming running backs is hard. Streaming wide receivers is hard. Streaming tight ends, quarterbacks, and defenses continues to be easy, even after 3 weeks. And definitely now going forward, like, we're starting to really see that. So you want to have a lot of options at running back, especially if you don't draft high on them, which is kind of where we are in most of our leagues.
And to be honest with you, I'm pretty happy with that because a lot of the running backs, especially the ones that are being drafted high, just really aren't worth it from a playing perspective. I'd rather have those wide receivers that we drafted high because they're actually performing.
And that's the thing. We're 11-7 on the season, so we can't say that the strategy hasn't worked. We do have one team that's 0-3. So obviously we have a couple teams that are 3-0 and two teams that are 2-1. Or I guess 1-2 and 2-1. So, but that's the total for us, 11-7. The 0-3 team, again, it comes back to patience. Stay patient. Don't panic. We can certainly turn it around. We have the players to do so. Just got to make the right decisions. And again, this is where it gets, for us, going after week four and get into those buys, this is where it should get easier for you if you're smarter and do a better job than other people who panic or play emotionally or get kind of caught up in you know certain trends that may not be what they appear to be.
Yeah, the buys are where the actual strategy starts to truly apply because you've got that data from the earlier games, and now that the buys are in, you start seeing which streamers are better. You also start to see you just only have certain amount of people that you can play. So I mean, you're forcing yourself, and that's where your depth is tested.
Yeah, and you get the matchup there. I mean, it's a good example. Marvin Jones is the top scoring wide receiver, and Marvin Jones is like an seventh to ninth round draft pick. You know. Sixth round sometimes in that range though. If you got him there, you got great value, but you are lucky. Make no doubt about it because you had no way of knowing how good he would be. You had no way of knowing that he would be Calvin Johnson good. You just had no way of knowing because he's a new guy in an offense that he hasn't been in before, and you know there's potential, but you don't know how good he's going to be, and you also can't think he's going to keep that up. So if you're 3-0 based on that, you're probably, you know, not going to, don't expect that to continue. This is where, again, it starts getting into strategy and luck and a lot, all these things. But hey, luck is real and it's okay. And if it's got you three wins so far or something or a good start because you got the guy, go ahead. Now we'll talk a little more about him. Let's get into the Fantasy 15. The first round draft pick that we're concentrating on is Ezekiel Elliott. What did you think we were going to get with Elliott this year?
Well, I mean, overall, I guess what I expected was I expected a lot of carries. I also expected him to be average with those carries. You know, I guess what I thought was that it was going to take him time to really acclimate to the pro game. And just because he's a running back, like, we've been burned by rookie running backs a lot. And for me, you know, the risk-reward factor is just a little out of whack, especially in the current NFL, where I just don't want a running back that high. And when I consider that he's a rookie, you know, then it just kind of pushes him that much further out of my interest level.
Well, the first round running backs, I mean, honestly, I looked at it and I went, every single one of them I have a question mark or two with. And with Elliott, it is, I mean, I think people were less drafting him and more drafting his offensive line.
Yeah, for sure they were.
And it's a tremendous offensive line.
And workload.
And those things are certainly strong. But again, it's not that I didn't think he's worthwhile. It should be a high draft pick. I was looking at him as a third rounder, not a first rounder, though.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about where he should have been drafted, based on, I'd say, about 25%, and it does happen. I mean, you know, LaDainian Tomlinson was awesome in his rookie year, and it does happen. You get that guy in that rookie year right away. Is just tremendous, you know, and is worth that, but it's rare. And so, I mean, maybe 25% of them are worth the first round draft pick that they get. Usually what happens with these guys is they get overdrafted in the first year. Coleman being an example last year.
Yes.
You know, from Atlanta.
Underdrafted in the second year.
Yeah, exactly. Underdrafted in the second year, and the third and fourth, fifth year, that's when you kind of get them drafted where they should be drafted. And David Johnson's a good example of somebody else who kind of will probably fall underneath that. So we're going to see, and that's kind of where I feel with Elliott, a third-round draft pick was good because he has lots of potential there, but it's too high with too many unknowns to be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his stats. I mean, 274 yards rushing, a couple TDs. He's got only 5 receptions for 25 yards. So, I mean, from a PPR perspective, he's not worth it. And really, with the TDs, more will come, but it's not it's just not the output that you really... This is not first-round output.
This is not, no. I mean, yeah, 274 yards, I mean, 90 yards a game is good. But when you look, add together five receptions, you add together only two TDs, a 3.9 yards per carry average. And can he keep up at that pace? Can he keep carrying the ball nearly 25 times a game? I'm not so sure he can. I don't know that he can keep that up. He's a talented player, and physically gifted as well, but we'll see. So let's move on to...
The next game, though, at San Francisco, that should be a... He should get another 30 carries, and he could have a big game there.
Exactly, and maybe you want to sell high on him then. Let's look at Jordy Nelson as the second-round pick. What were you expecting with Jordy Nelson this year?
Oh, Jordy Nelson was tough because, you know, coming back from a big injury like he was, I mean, there's always the question of, is he going to be injured? Is he going to have the stuff now that he comes back? You know, I think everybody in this case, especially drafting second in the him in the second round, people are drafting Aaron Rodgers through Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we were hoping for. And so I expected him to be average to start, and I expect him to grow into that position a little more. Maybe he doesn't quite wind up as a wide receiver one, but, you know, the hope is there that he'll reclaim that form.
With wide receivers going off the board so much in the drafts, and with him previously being a top five wide receiver in fantasy, it wasn't a bad position to draft him in. So we kind of looked at him and thought, that's probably right, about right. But I think you're right. We're looking at him thinking, slow start and get better. Now, that's happened so far this season, but he's gotten better quickly. More quickly, I think, than we anticipated. You know, his first two games, nothing special, though the TDs helped. This last game, he was tremendous. Yeah. But that was against Detroit, and obviously they still have a weak secondary. So, but he even produced fairly well against Minnesota, and, you know, Kelvin Benjamin, you certainly can't say that for it. So I think Jordy Nelson, though, is kind of a wait-and-see guy, but we'll see. We think he's going to get better as the season goes on.
Well, when you look at the 17 receptions, you know, for a PPR, that's fair. 206 yards is fair. But the four touchdowns already in three games, that's actually really good, especially when you consider that you've got a running back who's got way more touches that we just talked about, who has half as many touchdowns.
And speaking of running backs, we're going to stick to the same team, because in the third round, we're going to talk about Eddie Lacy. Eddie Lacy was really a late second round, early third round pick consistently. His overall PPR average draft position was number 25 in a 12-team league. What do you think, Brett?
Well, you know, the thing was about Eddie Lacy is that, you know, you're obviously hoping for touchdowns because he's a big fella. You're hoping that Starks doesn't take away the carries, and you're hoping that whole P90X whatever workout worked for him to help, you know, keep him on the field. And so definitely the hope was that you were getting, you know, in the third round that you were going to wind up with a guy who would basically produce the same as Ezekiel Elliott. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, what we're seeing, other than a lack of touchdowns, we're seeing a guy who's producing really similar to Ezekiel Elliott.
But it's you know, very similar. The difference is nine less touches a game. Nine less, actually even less if you look at, because he only has two receptions.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, really, we're looking at 10 less touches a game or nine carries less a game. That is a killer. And because he's averaging very well, but he's not getting the touchdowns. He's not getting the receptions. So he is a guy who he's performing well on the field, even though he still looks chunky, you know.
He's always going to look chunky.
He's always going to look
chunky.
Just
the way he is. Yeah. Yeah.
But he's performing well on the field. What he's not doing is getting you the value of his draft position yet, though. If this was a guy you had taken in the fifth or sixth, that's fine. In the second round, he's not getting you that value yet. That said, he does appear to be improving, and so does their defense, or sorry, their offense. So he's going to have a bye this week. That's probably actually the best thing, and then we'll move on and see what we expect out of him. But I think so far we're looking at a guy who is a guy who has improved his on-field play, but maybe not his fantasy value, and I think that's kind of what we were worried about with him.
It's the big concern.
The risk to leave him, though, to not draft him there was too high.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest concern is that if he's not getting the touchdowns, he's not going to get the receptions. And that's that is my biggest concern, and it's been, you know, carried out so far. I hope that, and I expect as the season goes on that he'll start getting more touchdowns. Will he get more yard, like a lot of 100 yards a game? No, but hopefully he'll start getting touchdowns.
I think he'll end up with good game average, but and a good, you know, average per carry. But yeah, I mean, if you don't get any, let's face it. I mean, again, we have to think to ourselves: we're drafting PPRs. Why are we drafting a guy who's going to end up with, you know, on pace to end up with 10 or 11 receptions? Thomas Rawls, Christine Michael was the fourth round pick. We were not high on them. We thought even though he had fallen because of the injuries of Rawls and everything, we still thought that might be a little high. My opinion coming into the season was that it wouldn't be either one of them who'd likely, like Rawls came out of nowhere last year. I could see somebody coming out of nowhere that we're not even thinking of, not even Procy, you know, if I'm pronouncing his name right, and I'm not even sure I am. CJ Procy, Procy's. But anyways, I don't even know if it's going to be him. Like Rawls came out of nowhere last year. I see both guys as injury risks, certainly Rawls. And but more than that, again, if you're drafting Elliott for the offensive line, we're not drafting Rawls for the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, Rawls, you know, Rawls had a lot of injury red flags coming into this season. And their offensive line is a disaster. I mean, they've basically gone with the option of paying them, you know, minimum wage, basically, to try to fill out an offensive line. And as we can see so far, that Russell Wilson's hurt, Thomas Rawls is hurt, you know, it's not working.
No.
And I think that when you see what Rawls accomplished, I mean, you know, in game one, 12 carries for 32 yards, 3 receptions for 26. The next game, 7 for minus 7, 3 receptions for 15 yards. I mean, he has 25 yards rushing and 41 yards receiving.
Yeah, and that's on 19 carries. He's averaging 1.3 yards per carry. Is he that bad? No. Is the offensive line that bad? It is. And I know Christine Michael had a nice game, but he played San Francisco. And that's that first week, San Francisco was an anomaly. They're a bad team, and teams will run on them. And that's not indicative of what you can expect from that offensive line and that team going forward. The Rams game is probably a little closer, even though that was probably extreme on the other end. But, you know, even against even in week one against Miami, you know, 15 carries for 66 yards, you know, just a little over 3 yards per carry, you know, or about, I guess, 4 yards per carry. But nothing spectacular. I think that's exactly the type of performance. I think 66 yards and maybe a reception or two is the exact type of performance per game you would expect out of a Seahawks running back this year. And that's not worth a fourth rounder. That's an eighth or ninth rounder.
Yeah, I mean, where Christian Michael was drafted is perfectly acceptable for what he, or is actually great for what he's currently producing. But that being said, I mean, they're at the Jets next week, and so I would expect the 60, closer to the 60 yards as opposed to the 106 yards.
And feel fortunate if you get a TD.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's gotten a couple of TDs again.
But again, in one game.
Yeah.
One game. And a game that's that not really indicative of the season. Now, here's another guy that we just thought was being overdrafted. You know, Andrew Luck was still being drafted as the third or fourth generally quarterback. He was taken in the fifth round, and you know what, quarterback 4 on average. And I know people are like, oh, a bounce back and a talented guy. And he is a talented guy, and he's a competitor, and he has a couple of nice weapons, but he doesn't have a run game, he doesn't have an offensive line, and he doesn't have a defense that you can consistently know is going to get off the field. I mean, the time of possession will never be in their favor because they're a quick strike offense against a defense that can't stop anybody, and people can just eat up the clock. And again, yeah, you a QB1 for sure, absolutely, no question. Look at week one, you know. But look at the overall season, and it's solid stats, but not spectacular. It's low end QB1 stats for today's NFL, because we're talking about, yeah, he's going 300 yards a game, but only 6 TDs. 2 interceptions, and this is in the modern NFL where 300 yards a game is not what it used to be. Well, overdrafted.
Yeah, overdrafted, given that it's round 5. And I mean,
that's going to continue.
Yeah, I mean, and look at last year when I mean, he would have been drafted or even higher, like he was going
QB one often.
Yeah, like in the first round, like last year, we were looking at. I mean, the biggest thing about Andrew Luck is that he's currently averaging over 40 attempts, passing attempts per game. I mean, he's throwing the ball way more than he ever should, but I don't see that stopping. I mean, sure, it looks good. 6 TDs to 2 interceptions, 913 yards. I mean, he's playing pretty well, but the couple of fumbles, you know, the problem is...
Again, though, he had a spectacular week one, and from there, he's not much. And also, and that was in a game they lost, but against a terrible secondary, we talk about Detroit. Like, it was skewed. You know, Denver obviously wasn't good, and then San Diego's probably exactly where he's going to be. That is, I mean, if you project that, that would have been, about a 16, 17-point game. He's probably in that 17, 18 range, which is a starter, but not, you know. And the other thing about him is, he's going to get hurt. That offensive line, he's going to get hurt again.
Yeah.
He was already questionable this last week.
Another team that's attempting to put patchwork offensive lines together, and that's...
patchwork everything.
That's never easy.
I never understood why Duke Johnson was being drafted so high. His usage last year and the previous years, and now he's with a new coach, I just never saw anything to make me think that he should be going that much higher than a similar type of player with a better history of production like a Theo Riddick. I just didn't get it. Draftable? Yeah, but... In round 7?
Well, it's funny because I think the look on Duke Johnson...
Sorry, 6. Round 6.
6. Would be that Duke Johnson would become Hugh Jackson's Gio Bernard, which would make him worth it. And given that Isaiah Crowell had shown nothing in, you know, prior to this year, I think the concept was that he could even take over the starting running.
Let me tell you something. Gio Bernard was not worth a 6th-round draft pick last year, though.
No. No, he wasn't.
You know, 8 or 9. And about this year, that's about the same. Like, I just thought, this is too high.
I mean,
again, he's a guy I would love to have on my team if I could have got him in the 8th or 9th round where his other similar players, where Sproles was going or a Sims was going, and I just didn't see it.
But the truth is, I mean, he has less than 200 yards total. He's only got 12 receptions, for a guy who's got to make his living in that space. He's not blowing me away. He's got 16 carries. So, I mean, he's just a guy who's kind of there.
Yeah.
He's way, way overdrafted currently at a 6th-round draft.
Yeah, so we're right on him so far, and I don't think that's going to change. Again, just overdrafted. Next was a guy who I thought was being drafted a little low, and that was DeSean Jackson. I was looking at DeSean Jackson and thinking to myself, he's produced. Last year, he's produced in the past. He's always produced when he's got a contract on the line, and he's got a contract on the line. And that was kind of my thing about DeSean Jackson. I was like, this guy's good. He wants to get paid again. So I figured he was going to have a good season. And last year, if not for injuries and luck and everything, he would have produced. The scary thing about Jackson was, that offense, it didn't look like they were going to make anybody the man. They're going to spread the ball around. But so far this year, I think great value where he was drafted.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, Kirk Cousins is kind of showing himself to be a bit of a gunslinger. He's a guy who likes to throw the ball up there and likes to try to score because they need to. Their defense, you know, can be a little questionable sometimes. But when you look at it, I mean, he's got 14 receptions, which... you know, for where you drafted him is okay, but 238 yards and 1 touchdown. So, I mean, here's the thing, you know, when you look at that by itself, you know, yeah, we're not putting him in a wide receiver 1 category, but you drafted him in round 7. You're talking about a wide receiver 3/4, maybe even 5 category by the time you've hit there. I'm perfectly happy with those numbers.
Love a guy, he's putting up, you know, 14, 15 points a game. I'm not going to complain about that. For him, like I said, I think he could have gone even 1 or 2 rounds earlier. T.Y. Yeldon is the next guy on our list. He's a guy who I also thought was being underdrafted. I thought he had potential, breakout potential on that offense. With the ability of that offense to throw, that there would be holes for an improvement. But we're wrong. They've never been consistently able to establish any sort of run game in that offense. And the offensive line is obviously not very good, especially at run blocking. We can combine that with the struggles that Bortles and his receivers have had, except for Robinson finally this week breaking out a little bit. Nobody looks like, it's not just Yeldon. I'm not sure anybody could run under that offensive line. And he's certainly not looking spectacularly, no matter what. He's not looking good. The line's not looking good. It's not looking good. I think with this guy, ended up high, and we're wrong on him, too.
Yeah, I mean, 2.5 yard average, which actually may go down, which is kind of the scary thing. And unfortunately, much like Duke Johnson, here's a guy with only 14 receptions so far for 51 yards. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, he's got one TD in that first game, which was the only thing that saved him. After that, he's been pretty much a disaster. Like, week one, the TD saved him. Week two, 8 receptions saved him. Week three, nothing saved him at all. Like, no. If you played him, it was horrible. But here, the biggest difference, sure, we were wrong, but we still picked him 2 rounds later than Duke Johnson.
That's true. And he's still outproducing Johnson. Because, he's still averaging almost 5 carries or almost 5 receptions a game, so that's 5 points. So that has, but like you say, this last game was none. If he doesn't produce this week, I know Ivory's there, and you have to expect that he's going to get more and more opportunities, but if he doesn't produce this week against Indianapolis with maybe the worst run defense in the league, that's it. It's time to, I'm not saying cut him. But I'm saying cut bait, don't start him, and look to trade him or look to make a move in some way.
Oh, but the truth is, if there's a better option on the waiver wire, I say go for it. All right, moving on to our first tight end, Antonio Gates. I mean, you want to talk about disappointing? Well, right here, right now.
We kind of, in one case when we were drafting, ended up with Gates because we waited too long on a tight end and there was nobody left and we didn't want him. But it's like, well, he's producing the pass and I think their offense will be pretty good, so we'll take him, but we had no expectations. It was kind of like, let's take him in case he's good, but prepare to cut bait quickly when another option presents itself. And that's right. I mean, every year, and I've been burned in the past, we both have in the past, where we're going, this is it, this is the year where the guy's too old, because there's times where you go, he's not too old, and then he's, and you get burned, and that's what's happening with this year with people who took Gates, and there's other times where you go, he's too old, and he still produces, and that's what happened last year with Gates.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at 6 receptions for 35 yards, 1 touchdown. I mean, he's only played the 2 games, and he might, I don't know how many games he's going to miss, but he's certainly trending in the wrong direction, and so for us in that case, in the one league that we have him, that's unfortunate.
It's where what we talk about is, when we're drafting or even looking at the waiver wire, we'd always rather go with the young guy who has potential to get better than the old guy whose days may have passed him by. Here's a good example of somebody that we thought was a young guy who had potential to get better.
Well, Tevin Coleman, he's one of the funniest guys to me that I look at, because last year we looked at Tevin Coleman as a guy who was being overdrafted where he was and a guy that we expected to get injured. This year, We looked at Devontae Freeman as a guy who was probably being overdrafted, had a great potential to be injured, so we were drafting Tevin Coleman, and it's working out spectacularly so far. I mean, sure, he's only got 32 carries for 110 yards. Oh, but 4 TDs. Of course, the last game against New Orleans barely counts. But, add that to another 10 receptions for 167 yards, and you're getting a player who at least for where you drafted him in the 10th round, this is a guy who's giving you great value.
He's a solid RB2, high-end RB2 numbers for a guy in the 10th round, which is why we didn't want to go all in on those early, guys like Elliott and Adrian Peterson, because we thought, it's just not worth it. You can find these guys. Yeah, okay, only 10 receptions, but you know what? The yards in those receptions is awesome. And the usage is awesome. Every game he's getting 15 touches, and there's opportunities in the red zone, and he's on a good offense. And, I think he's going to continue. And at that amount of usage, the thing that I like the best is he's not as likely to get hurt as I thought he was if he was ever going to carry the ball all the time like I was worried he would last year. So we're going to move now on to a guy that we got a whole bunch because we thought he was a nice breakout candidate, because players at his position have done well in the past, and that's Eli Rogers. Eli Rogers is a guy who, like I say, the slot position is being very, very solid in Pittsburgh for a while. And that meant that he had potential. He had a really nice game one, and the last two games have been a disappointment. The last game, though, against Philadelphia, again, a bit of an anomaly because, let's face it, that wasn't the Steelers that we expect. But so far, he's not even really ownable. Nevertheless, draftable in like the 12th or 13th like we did. It's a question, how long do you wait on a guy like this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that he's supposed to miss the game against Kansas City, which is going to further knock his value down. And I think the problem is that you're basically looking at week one and saying, oh, six receptions for 59 yards and one TD. I mean, that's really good stats for where we drafted him. But, you know, if he keeps returning one or two receptions, you can't hold on to potential. You have to give it up at some point. And I don't see Eli Rogers filling potential this season now. I view the like 2 for 32 as a little more of the norm for him, and the Washington game in week one being the outlier.
I think that we're going to see him have like a 3 or 4 week stretch where he's hot, but because you don't know what's going to be coming, and you don't know even after 1 or 2 weeks that you can trust him to produce the next week, you're going to probably have him on your bench and never use him, and by the time you put him back in, he's going to cool back down again. I hate that. That's always a huge fear.
Yeah,
Matthew Stafford, though, is a guy that we were like, I couldn't believe people were sleeping on him.
But here's the funny thing, though. They were sleeping on him in mock drafts, but when we got to actual draft day, Matt Stafford was flying off the board way higher than I ever expected.
Higher than in the mock drafts, but still, we were able to end up with him at where we thought we would. I mean, he was still going behind a lot of guys.
Well, he was still going behind Andrew Luck. And I mean, he also is averaging 40 attempts per game, but the difference is he's got 985, 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You know, he's got 47 yards rushing. I mean, here's a guy who is...
Can you look up his weekly rankings? I'm wondering what his ADP was, actually, Brett. Because we experienced it. Doesn't mean he was the QB number 5. That can't have been. His average draft position wasn't that, though, was it?
I don't know. We'll have to
look it up here. Yeah, and we're using something for stats here, Fantasy Pros, which is a nice website. But if you just go up to the top right and just click on the QB button in this situation, next to overall there, yeah, and we'll see where he pops up, and we'll get an idea. Well, if the QB button actually worked. Try it one more time. You got to love the internet. There we go. So he was on average, the number 17 quarterback at 123. Which is, you know, not where we necessarily saw him, but that kind of was, I believe, what we saw in most leagues for most people. And again, we just couldn't believe, based on how much potential his offense has, how much potential he has, how bad his defense is, and the fact he's going to have to throw for it. And this week against Green Bay was a perfect example of that. And how well he played last year once they put in the man with the greatest name in the history of offensive coordinating. He is...
Jim Bob Cooter.
Yeah! Cooter. So he was really great. Effective. Here's another guy that we definitely were afraid of, and first two games looked right, and last game looked wrong, and we're going to see what goes from here. What are you expecting with Jimmy Graham, who we were not high on?
Well, you know, Jimmy Graham was a guy that in the mock drafts, I took him a couple of times, you know, in a very late way, because... The thing is, he's got all the talent in the world, and if he ever figures it out within that offense, then he should be really good. The problem was, of course, he's coming back from a major injury. That's always a concern, and we hadn't seen the usage. So, I mean, technically, the usage in week two, you know, week one, you expect 1 for 11. He's coming back from a major injury. Week two, you know, 3 for 42. That's typical of his Seahawks, you know, career so far. Week three now, you know, 6 for 100 and a touchdown. That seems great. That seems like the Jimmy Graham we remember from New Orleans. But the difference is that was against San Francisco. Is he going to do that against the Jets? I doubt it. And the problem is, I think that you know, the 100-yard games are going to be a little more outliers as opposed to, you know, the norm.
Like, yeah, I mean, obviously he was somebody who's being drafted because you could not draft him, but he was being left to late because of all the concerns that you laid out there. That said, I think he was probably being drafted in exactly the right place, therefore.
Yep.
And the fact that we didn't grab him, I'm okay with, but the one thing I do have to say is that where we saw the reception, I saw one reception he made against San Francisco, which he could not, if he had any health issues, have made. It was a spectacular catch by a guy who's got to be healthy and is as physically gifted as you're going to find at the tight end position. So that makes me think that he might actually continue to play at a high level, maybe not quite as high as last game, but higher than we saw in week two. So I think we might have been wrong on him.
It's possible, but, you know, I mean, the truth is that by the time you got down to that level of tight ends, all of them look really similar.
So here's an interesting guy. We talked about Marvin Jones, the highest scoring guy, PPR, highest scoring guy.
Well, 408 yards, that's beastly.
Yeah. Here's what I said about Marvin Jones going into the season. He's going to have 3, 4, or 5 monster games. And a bunch of very average games where he's good but not great. And you're going to be waiting. And I don't like guys who are like that, though that can be a strategy of the home run hitters. But I saw him as a home run hitter who's going to hit it 25% of the time at a monster rate. And the rest of the time be a wide receiver 3-4. But end up with high-end wide receiver 2 or even wide receiver 1 stats because of his huge games. I'm still thinking that.
Well, you know, so far what we've seen is that his first game was his weakest, but it was still a good game. His second game was really strong. His third game was, you know, absolutely out of this world. But, you know, my biggest concern with Marvin Jones is actually not the fact that he's going to be up and down. It's more the fact that I'm concerned he's going to get injured.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You know, and so, I mean, his stats, yes, they're fantastic right now. I mean, do I think that the 4 for 85 is probably a little closer to what he's going to average? Yeah, I do think that. But ultimately, my biggest concern is his health.
So the question is, where we own him and for other people, would you sell high on him right now? Because right now you could sell high on him. You could probably get more for him than Ted Ginn Jr. right now. Which, by the way, was a trade offer. Somebody, our 9th round draft pick for their 15th. Somebody offered him that us that before week one. And it's like, no, who would do that? And I hate people that make those dumbass trades. I want to punch them. It's rude and it's stupid and it's whatever. Would you consider, though, trading high on him or selling high on him right now?
No, I wouldn't. Okay. I think he's got way more
potential.
Value
the potential is it'd have to be really high because we have to see if he has the potential to continue this or not. We don't know. We have guesses, but we don't know. And here's another guy who I thought was getting underdrafted based on his history of 5 yards per carry over his career. And the last time he was healthy and the number one guy in this offense, he was really producing. And his offensive coordinator, I still think, is a good offensive coordinator in mind, and that's Justin Forsett. But I'm sorry we own him at all. Sorry he did that to you.
It's, you know, that was a, and you know what?
It was weird.
It was weird. Like, the thing was...
He was cut the day we were doing our draft.
Yeah, we were drafting. We found out about it early. You know, we had already taken him the one time that we did own him. So we avoided him the rest of the day. And that was good because, you know, but the problem was is that then we went after Terrence West, which hasn't been good because he's not good either. Like, right now, their running back, you know, core is just a... It's a mess. It's a bit of a disaster.
And Dixon will be back soon. But I think the biggest thing is they're going to pass. It looks to me like they're going to pass 80 to 85% of the time. And generally, Flacco gets hot in a game, will complete 15 passes in a row, then throw 2 interceptions. But they're going to pass a lot. So, I mean, a guy like Mike Wallace has been great. And Forsett, like this week, has a spectacular matchup, you know, against Oakland. But they're passing too much. There's not enough balance in that offense.
Well, no,
and that's going to hurt them.
And I'm concerned by what I'm seeing ultimately because, you know, Forsett, I don't care if he gets 7 rushing attempts. You know, sure, he gets 20 yards, which is terrible. It's abominable. He's not going to get any touchdowns. What you're hoping for is receiving. And, I mean, 6 receptions last game for 12 freaking yards. I mean, how do you even manage that? I mean, he's only got... He's got, like, 12 receptions overall this year and 36 yards. He's not getting any yards when he even gets the ball. So, I mean, that's just too scary. And I'd be surprised if he manages to last the entire season with Baltimore. I wouldn't be surprised if they release him again.
Well, I mean, his salary is now manageable, but and I think they think that he could turn it around. But the truth is that once you get Forsett, West, and Dixon in there, that all three will get touches every game, and all three will be not worth a keep on your fantasy roster, nevertheless a start.
No, the reason that we chose Justin Forsett in the last position of the Fantasy 15 was because of the fact that he had been released, and it was just to kind of try to track, you know, the interest of, like, does he come back with a chip on his shoulder and being all tough? So far, no.
Well, he sounded like it in the interviews, but we haven't seen it. All right, I think that's it. We're going to go OUT on this one. Like I say, next week we'll be talking more about matchups and streaming and the data and really helping you hit it with the hind, get yourself some wins. But what do you want to say?
I'll say the usual. We'll see you, and we'll beat you.